All right, sci-fi4me.com. We are talking with Vonda N. McIntyre, and many people will know her as the author of the Star Trek II and Star Trek III novelizations, her series Starfarers, a number of different ones. Her debut novel, The Exile Waiting, in 1975. What I want to ask first, I guess, is since you've been in the business for that long, what have you noticed that has stayed the same since you first started getting published, and what have you noticed has changed over the years in terms of getting published?
Oh, gosh. That's actually kind of a hard question to answer because I did start publishing so long ago. It's hard for me to know what a new writer has to go through at this point. I get the feeling that it's a good bit harder. There's more people. It used to be that you could expect a response from an editor in 3 months or so, and now they just sort of cavalierly say, "Oh, well, we might get to it in a year," and I actually think that that's very bad manners.
It would seem that with the demand for ebooks and now with video and all of these other things that people are doing, you know, we keep hearing about how publishing is in such dire straits as it stands right now. You would think that they'd be quicker to pull the trigger on a manuscript that they think would sell. It seems kind of counterintuitive to me. Would you think?
I think that isn't really the problem. The problem is that there's so much stuff. The slush piles are so big because there's so many more people trying to get published, that it's hard to find that manuscript that you might want to publish. The problem is that because there might be a manuscript in there that you might want to publish, the slush piles just keep piling up and piling up instead of them just admitting, we're never going to get to this, and sending it back so the person can try someplace else. You know, if you look at it from the editor's point of view, it kind of makes sense. But if you look at it from the writer's point of view, you've handed over a little piece of your heart to somebody, and they're really not treating it very well.
Now, do you think?
You know, I have sympathy for people on both sides of the publishing field, but I really feel that holding somebody's work for a year is ridiculous.
You're a founding member of the Book View Cafe, which is an online collection of stories. Do you see that as a way of getting new writers exposure that they might not otherwise get? Or are we seeing the beginning of a trend there? Why start something like Book View Cafe?
Book View Cafe is not a regular publisher. We don't take submissions of new stories from new writers. We're an author's collective or cooperative. A bunch of people got together and said, you know, the mid-list in science fiction and other genres is not doing very well. It's hard to keep books in print, and we want our work in print. So since we have the ability to do that ourselves, let's do it ourselves. Most of the stuff on Book View Cafe if you look at my stuff, most of it is my backlist, which is difficult to come by.
So this is,
you know, if you walk into a bookstore, you're not going to find too much of my original fiction.
Right, this is the more hard to find.
You can get the printed books off my website, but my website is pretty small and obscure. So we all wanted a little bit easier way of people finding our work and finding it in ebook form, which publishers have been kind of slow to pick up on, to tell you the truth.
Do you think that the ebook is the way that publishing is going to go? I mean, I know we hear a lot about some of these new tablets and the readers and the technology is there, but it does seem like that there is a lot of resistance to get out of print and get into electronic. Is that going to be a fight all the way to the finish, or do you think eventually the publishers are going to come around and say, oh, this is just another channel we can distribute some of the material with?
I have no idea. I really don't. In publishing, you really never prediction is a mug's game.
Now, Eileen Gunn, wrote an interesting has an interesting piece on your website. It talks about your menagerie there at home, your wildlife rescue area. Is that something that, I mean, granted, I'm considering that it's a little exaggerated there for the sake of humor, but how much of that is true? How much of that is Vonda McIntyre saving animals and saving the environment and saving the wildlife?
Well, for one thing, nobody saves the environment or wildlife with having a menagerie in their backyard. I love Eileen's biography. It's my favorite biography of myself. It has few facts and much truth. Most of it is made up. I do, in fact, own some property that with some friends that we reforested. We turned it from a piece of land that looks like the craters of the moon to a piece of land that looks like a little forest. And when you go up there, you don't see the elk all that often, but you see a lot of elk poop. So, you know, there's critters using it for what forest and meadowland is supposed to be for. But I'm always kind of startled and pleased and horrified when people read Eileen's biography and take it for the gospel truth.
Now, a couple of trends in your books, a couple of things that show up on a recurring basis. These types of creatures called divers, and then the concept of biocontrol. I want to talk a little bit about that for a minute because it's shown up a number of different places.
Okay.
It seems to me that biocontrol is probably not that very far off in terms of what we're able to do with medicine and medical technology. Is that what was the process behind coming up with that? Was it just something you came up on your own, or you came across something in research, or how did that come about? And why is that a recurring item in your work?
Biocontrol is something that human beings have been experimenting with for a long time. So I didn't come up with the idea of biocontrol. I did come up with the idea of biocontrol of fertility, as far as I know. I mean, there may well be other stories before Dream Snake with that in it, but I don't happen to know of them right off the top of my head. It just seems like people's lives would be more their own if they had control over their own fertility, and so that's one of the things that some of my stuff explores. I get letters from people saying, well, how do I learn how to do this? And the only thing I can do is write them back and say, I have no idea. I wrote it in fiction because I hoped somebody would figure out how to do it in real life.
Now, a lot of people have said that we're at the point in science fiction we're there. We are living in the future now, and there's really not a whole lot of room to go from here in order for science fiction to continue to be speculative far enough out in the future. What are your thoughts on something like that? Do you think we still have stories to read, stories to write, or is the genre done?
No, I don't think the genre is anywhere close to done. It is a little hard to keep up with everything as a fiction writer. And I think that probably near future stuff is harder to write than far future stuff, because if you write something set 5 years in the future, the chances are that 5 years in the future, where somebody reads it, they're going to go, they didn't have that right. But, you know, science fiction is not about prediction. Science fiction is about speculation. And anybody who looks to science fiction for prediction is just looking at it wrong. There certainly have been things that people speculated about that came to pass, and there's probably a good bit of stuff that, having been speculated about in science fiction, caused it to come to pass. You know, Arthur C. Clarke's geosynchronous communication satellites are a good example. But you can find as much and more speculation that was just wrong. You can find a lot of science fiction where the speculation is kind of discontinuous, in that the technical speculation is pretty interesting, but the social speculation is just not there at all.
Right.
Where somebody said, oh, look at this super machine or super concept that would be so cool. But really, really fine science fiction doesn't stop there. It looks at what that speculation is, what effect that speculation is going to have on the people around it.
All right, how much emphasis do you put on the hard science in your work? I mean, you've done a number of different types of stories over the years, the novelizations and then your own original work. Are you a hard science fiction writer all the time, or you just scatter that in as you see fit?
I try to get it right whenever possible, but I'm not above stepping over the line for a good story. I'm not sure that we'll ever be able to go faster than light or get from here to someplace else faster than light by not going faster than light. But it's a useful prop in a story. Otherwise, you're kind of stuck with generation ships and hibernation.
Sure.
Although, you know, that can be kind of interesting, too. So it depends on what story you want to tell. But generally speaking, I do try to get the science at least minimally plausible.
So warp speed, transporters, you don't think those are going to come about?
Transporters I absolutely and completely do not believe in.
Well, okay. So
the energy, the whole, you could write a whole philosophical tract about transporters, but I'm not going to do that right now.
All right. So speaking of Star Trek, for just a moment, let's go to your novelizations. I know they were a while back, Star Trek II and Star Trek III. One thing specifically that I have wanted to ask you since I first read them when they first came out was what was the thought process behind making those books focus on the Savick character so much? That was one thing that I'd noticed reading them the first time. I thought there seemed to be a lot of the story told from Savick's point of view, almost as if she was the main character. And I was wondering if that was a conscious decision on your part, or if it just worked out that way, or how did that come about?
Okay, first off, I have no idea what was in the hearts and minds of the people who made the movies. I only had the screenplays to deal with. And the screenplays were, in some cases, fairly different from what ended up on the screen. And at this remove, it's really hard to remember what I made up and what was in the screenplay that ended up on the cutting room floor or was never filmed. My memory of it is there was a good bit more of Savick in the screenplays than ended up in the movies. You know, whether somebody was thinking maybe this is a character that we could go do more stuff with in the movie context, I just don't know. I just thought she was a really neat character, and she needed a backstory. And if you just transcribe a screenplay into prose, you end up with about 100 pages of manuscript, which is not very much. So you need to add stuff. And you can just pad relentlessly, but that's boring. You know, you throw in a lot of adjectives, and I don't want to write that way. So I threw in some subplots, some character development, and some backstory, and everybody seemed relatively pleased with what I had done, so that's what happened.
So that's what you have done. Let's ask now what you are doing. I know in various different bibliographies, there's not anything recent, really. You know, a couple of short stories and some collections. What's going on now for Vonda McIntyre? What's coming out next?
I'm not sure what's coming out next. I'm one of those writers who doesn't really talk about what they're working on because I feel like talking about it uses up the energy that I need to write it with. You know, if you tell the story, then, well, you've told the story. You don't need to write it down. I know some folks who tell their first drafts to people. They'll sit down, they'll tell you the whole story. And I keep saying, don't tell it to me, don't tell it to me. You won't ever write it down. Say, no, this is how I write my first drafts. And then they go home and they just write it, and their first draft is their final draft. And that just seems like magic to me. I don't know how anybody does it. On the other hand, they don't know how I go through a bunch of drafts you go through a bunch of drafts? Isn't that boring? Well, no, that's how I find out what the story is. So I can't really talk too much about what I'm writing, although I am working on some stuff. And as for the hiatus, all I can say is life is complicated.
Oh, sure. I think everybody goes through a little bit of that every now and again. Let me ask this, though, just speaking in general, are we going to see any more from the series that you've written, Starfarers or any of the others, or maybe even going back to Star Trek?
I don't think there's any Star Trek in my future. It's a different world now.
What'd you think of the new movie?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
But, you know, you can nitpick anything, but I didn't really feel like nitpicking. I just enjoyed it. I thought, what's his name, Zachary
Quinto? Yep.
The guy who plays Spock, I thought he was as cute as a bug. You know, I just thought he just did it absolutely right.
Okay, well, Vonda McIntyre, thank you very much for your time today. We're looking forward to whatever comes out next from your pen.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to reading it, hopefully getting a review copy. And we will definitely be in touch.
It might be a little while, but I will hope to do that.
All right, we're looking forward to it. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
All right, Vonda McIntyre on scififorme.com.